CBC WH&S Induction Program. The purpose of this safety program is to provide general information and awareness related to health and safety in the workplace. CBC Group is committed in providing a safe and healthy work environment so far as is reasonably practicable for all workers, contractors, and visitors at the workplace. It will take approximately 40 minutes to complete, including 20 multiple choice questions and 4 task assessments at the completion of the program. WH&S Policies and Procedures. CBC is committed to providing a safe and healthy work environment for all workers, contractors, and visitors to the workplace. Aims and objectives of the policy: provide and maintain a safe work environment without risks to health, safety, and well-being. Provide and maintain adequate facilities, plant, and equipment for the welfare of workers and others carrying out their duties. Strive to prevent accidents, injuries, and disease through identification, assessment, control or elimination, minimization of hazards and risks. Promote safety awareness. Support and promote employee involvement in health and safety through consultation or other agreed methods. Ensure compliance with Work Health and Safety Act and regulations. WH&S responsibilities. Duty of care is everyone's responsibility. It requires everything reasonably practicable to be done to protect the health, safety, and welfare of yourself and others. A safe work environment is essential. The effects of poor safety performance can include injury resulting in disability or death, high absenteeism and retention of employees, loss of productivity, higher direct and indirect costs, adverse publicity, loss of contract. Work Health and Safety Act. Under the WH&S Act, the law ensures that the PCBU provides a safe and healthy workplace for their workers. It also requires that workers use safe work practices so they do not injure or harm themselves or others. Responsibilities of employers and workers. Employers' responsibility. PCUB, person conducting a business or undertaking. The PCUB shall ensure the health, safety and welfare at work of all their workers, contractors and visitors. The responsibility of duty of care cannot be delegated. Provide or maintain plant or systems of work that are, so far as reasonably practicable, safe and without risk to health. So far as is reasonably practicable, safe and without risk to health. Provide, so far as is reasonably practicable, adequate facilities for the welfare of workers. Provide such information, instruction, training or supervision to enable workers to perform their work in a safe manner. To consult with workers on matters that may affect their safety and well-being. Workers' responsibility. Every worker should take reasonable care for the health and safety of persons who are at their work or who may be affected by any act or omission on that worker's part. Comply with reasonable and lawful instruction. Follow a reasonable and lawful instruction. Do not interfere or misuse equipment. Report any unsafe conditions or situations. How to achieve safety goals. This diagram illustrates how CBC strives to achieve its safety goals. Safety is a shared responsibility and requires consultation and collaboration between all interested parties. Know your site. Be aware of your work environment. There are many potential hazards in the workplace. Therefore, you need to be aware of your site policies, procedures, and instructions, such as who authorized the work, who is the first aid officer and safety reps, where are the closest emergency exits, emergency contact details, are there any specific hazards such as electrical, asbestos, chemicals or gas, where are the emergency exits, equipment and assembly points, is any specific PPE required on the site or to do the job, what facilities are available and where are they. Risk management. The elimination or minimization and control of hazards or risks in the workplace is essential in preventing accidents or injury and maintaining a safe work environment. A hazard is something that has the potential to cause harm, injury or illness, or loss, damage to property and equipment to a person or the environment. A risk occurs when people are exposed to a hazard and there is a likelihood of injury or illness caused by the hazard. A workplace accident is an event arising out of employment that causes injury, illness, or damage to property or the environment. A near miss is an event arising out of employment or activity that does not cause injury, illness, or damage to property or impact the environment, but has the potential to do so. 5 steps of risk management. What is risk management? Risk management is the identification, assessment, and prioritization of hazards and associated risks, followed by the coordinated application of resources to eliminate, minimize, monitor, and control the risks. Any implemented controls should be reviewed to ensure they are effective and no new hazards have been introduced. 5 stages of risk management. Identify the hazards. Assess the hazards. Eliminate or minimize hazards and risks. Control the risk. Review controls. Common hazards in the workplace. Tripping hazards such as pallets, stairs, and cracks in the floor. Chemical hazards, solvents, gas, fuel, flammable materials. Electric hazards, frayed cords, faulty equipment, overloaded circuits, overhanging electrical wires. Noise, vibration, structural damage, working at heights. Ergonomic hazards, improperly positioned workstation and chairs, frequent lifting, bending, and repetitive movements. Biological hazards, infectious materials or substances, blood and bodily fluids or viruses. Risk management steps. Step 1. Identify the hazard. Hazard identification is the process of identifying all situations or events that could give rise to potential for injury, illness, or damage to the plant, equipment, or property, or the environment. The hazard identification in this picture uses a liquid sill from a container in an area shared by mobile equipment, forklifts, and pedestrians. The potential risks are exposure to a hazardous chemical, slip, trip and fall or serious injury to a person or damage to property, equipment or the environment due to a forklift having no traction. Step 2. Assess the hazard and risk. Risk assessment is the process of determining the likelihood of an injury or illness or damage to plant, equipment, property or the environment. Assess the risk and surroundings to ensure the area is safe from other hazards. Do not put yourself at risk. Do not touch any unknown chemicals or substances, damaged or suspect equipment or structures. Get assistance. Secure the area to prevent others entering the area of risk. Report your findings. Try to identify what the chemical is. Refer to SDSs if available. Step 3. Eliminate or minimize the hazard and risks. Without putting yourself or others at risk, do what you can to eliminate or minimize the hazard and risks. This can be achieved by barricading the area off from pedestrians and mobile equipment. Place warning signs. Refer to any SDSs that may be available. Notify your fellow workers and promptly report the hazard to your supervisor. If in doubt or the hazard is beyond control, call the emergency services. Step 4. The control risks. Hazards can be controlled or isolated to ensure a safe workplace by either eliminating or minimizing the risks, substitute for a less hazardous item or product, redesign or re-engineer, such as installing safety guards, safety switches, training, display warning signs, and instructions. Step 5. Review controls. Once the hazard has been identified, assessed, and the appropriate control measures put in place, you need to review the outcome. Was the risk treatment process effective? No other hazards have been introduced as a result of the implemented controls. Consult with all interested stakeholders to ensure the hazard and risks have been effectively controlled. Reporting hazards, injuries, incidents, or near misses. All unsafe conditions, incidents, accidents, or injuries, or near misses must be reported immediately to your manager or supervisor and the client's representative, including any of the above that may have been caused by a contractor. Always be on the lookout for any potential hazards or unsafe conditions. Be familiar with your surroundings. Reporting steps. Immediately report any injury, unsafe condition, accidents or dangerous occurrences to your manager or supervisor, including the client's representative. Complete a hazard alert report form. If an incident or injury involves a CBC worker, complete an incident injury report form. In the case if any incident or injury involving a CBC worker that is deemed serious enough and has resulted in lost time and external medical treatment, an investigation must be completed using investigation form. Safety signs. There are potential dangers when you are working. Safety signs are displayed in the workplace to remind you of the things you must do, must not do, be aware of, or restricted to be safe. Signs and symbols are used in a workplace to convey information to workers and visitors to the site. Safety signs help prevent accidents, warn of health and safety hazards, promote safety awareness, identify where emergency equipment is located, identify safe egress in the event of an emergency, identify specific safety equipment, PPE, that must be worn. Safety signs can be in the form of pictures and symbols, text-based messages, picture signs with a short message. There are 7 categories of safety signs. 1. Prohibited signs. These signs indicate what you must not do. They are red circle with a line through it and white background. 2. Mandatory signs. These signs tell you what you must do, such as wear safety equipment, PPE. They are blue with a white background. 3. Hazard or caution signs. These signs warn of a danger or risk. They are yellow with black border and black symbol. 4. Danger hazard signs. These signs warn of a particular hazard or dangerous condition that can be life-threatening. They are made up of the word danger in white on red background and black border and text. 5. Emergency signs. These signs indicate safe conditions, example, safety equipment, first aid and emergency exits. They have a green background and white symbol. 6. Fire signs indicate location of fire alarm, firefighting equipment, etc. They are of red background and white text. 7. Restricted signs indicate limitations placed on activity or use. They are red circular border, no crossbar, white background. Emergency procedures. Emergencies can result from a number of different causes, such as fires, electrical, gas leaks, chemical spills, explosion, exposure to hazardous chemicals or substances, or structural collapse. If you discover a fire, raise the alarm and follow your site-specific emergency evacuation procedures. Therefore, you need to be familiar with the site's emergency procedures by completing a site induction. Basic requirements in the event of an emergency. Ensure the safety of anyone within the vicinity. Follow the directions of the emergency evacuation team members of the site. Call the fire brigade, emergency service if deemed necessary. Extinguish the fire if safe to do so. Evacuate the building in an orderly manner. Do not put yourself at risk. Do not use a lift in an emergency evacuation. Assemble at the emergency assembly point. Check on other colleagues to ensure they have evacuated. Report to the wardens if you think someone is missing. Notify the client's representative that you are safe. Emergency preparedness. Your duties or responsibilities will vary from site to site depending on the client's instructions. Therefore, you need to be aware of your site-specific duties during an emergency. Follow the direction of the site's emergency team. Let someone know where you are and you are safe. Do not attempt to drive off the site during an emergency. Let someone know you are okay. Do not remain or enter areas of risk during an emergency. Evacuate as requested. Report any such occurrences to the CBC management team. Do not put yourself at risk. it should be clearly understood that the primary duty is not to combat the emergency, but to ensure, as far as is practicable, the safety of yourself, the occupants, and their orderly evacuation from the building or work area, and to assemble in a safe area. Injuries and first aid. If you are injured at work, it is vital that you seek immediate first aid. If the injury is serious, dial 000 and call an ambulance. A basic first aid kit is supplied in each company vehicle. Ensure it is maintained. All injuries should be reported to your manager and client representative immediately, and the register or injury book must be filled in. Ensure you know the location of the first aid kit in your work area. Seek treatment on site if available. Complete an incident injury report form. A small cut or minor graze, which causes no pain, can quite easily get infected if no treatment is given after the incident. Report all injuries to your manager. Electrical safety. Electrical equipment and appliances have the potential to cause quite serious shock, burns, and electrocution, or even death. Do not work with damaged or faulty equipment. Always check your tools. The most common electrical hazards are overloaded power sockets, cables laid across the floor, unsafe and faulty equipment, defective cords, frayed or damaged. Incorrect placement of electrical equipment. Electrical equipment should be treated with caution and any damaged or faulty equipment reported and immediately removed from service and replaced. Keep electrical cables neat and tidy. All electrical equipment now used in the workplace should be tested and tagged in accordance with AS 3670. Do not mix water and electricity. Electricity can travel through electrical conductors, including the human body, resulting in shock, burns, and even death. Factors that affect the impact of an electric shock include the type of current, the voltage, the resistance, the number of watts, and length of contact with the human body. 1. Check. 2. Do. 3. Don't. 1. Check. Do you need any training before using new equipment? How many items do you have plugged into your power socket? Are any of the cords frayed or damaged? Is the cord squashed under other equipment? Is there any sign of overheated sockets or cables? Is the electrical equipment tested or tagged? Are the cables laid out neat and tidy? Have you checked the work area and surrounds to ensure there are no other hazards? 2. Do. Ensure the power socket is switched off when plugging in equipment. Report any unsafe equipment. Attach an unserviceable label on it. Replace exposed, frayed or faulty power cords. Secure power leads to prevent trip hazards. Ensure that electrical equipment is regularly inspected and maintained. Contact a qualified tradesperson to do any maintenance or repairs. Do not attempt to fix faulty electrical equipment if you are not trained or competent in its use. 3. Don't. Do not overload power sockets and do not use double adapters. Do not use extension leads unless approved. Do not attempt to repair electrical equipment yourself unless trained. Do not remove any danger tags or lockout tags. Do not use any equipment identified as unsafe. Do not lay cables across the floor. Do not leave it for someone else. They may not be so lucky. Slips, trips, and falls. The most common cause of non-fatal injuries in the Australian workplace is slips, trips, and falls. They can result in serious injuries and lost time. The most common causes of slips, trips, and falls are wet and oily floor surfaces, spillages, wet weather, the incorrect use of ladders, boxes, pallets and general rubbish in walkways, objects or rubbish in your way, cluttered and congested work areas, slippery roofs, obstruction of view, poor lighting, uneven steps or tiles, uplifting carpet or tiles, falling through a ceiling, electrical cords incorrectly positioned across walkways. Manual handling. Manual handling involves more than just safe lifting principles. It refers to lifting, carrying, twisting, pulling, pushing, lowering, moving, holding, or restraining an object or person. Lift within your own capacity. Not following proper manual handling procedures or techniques can lead to problems with your back, shoulders, neck, arms, and legs. The most effective way of reducing manual handling risks is to use mechanical devices, team lifting, redesign the equipment, workstation layout or system of work, and regular exercise. Do not attempt to lift unless you are sure it is safe to proceed. Manual handling risk analysis. Safe manual handling is not about seeing how much you can lift and not hurt yourself. It is about the control or elimination of risks. 1. Identify. Firstly, identify the task likely to involve a manual handling risk. 2. Assess. Secondly, assess the extent of the risk to see if the risk to health and safety exists. 3. Control. Thirdly, find ways of controlling or eliminating the risk by eliminating or reducing the manual handling risk. 4. Review. Lastly, then review the outcome or results to ensure no other risks have been introduced. Applying a systemic approach to manual handling tasks will eliminate or reduce injuries. 1. Identify. Identify the job or tasks that are likely to or have caused injury. Know the task. Observe other employees performing the task. Consult with employees who are more likely to know the risks. Refer any injury reports related to the tasks. Seek outside professional advice if necessary. Evaluate the task and assess the risks considering the following. Is the task tiring, strenuous, difficult, or beyond the capacity of the person doing the task? What is the duration and frequency of the task? What are the weights and forces? Is there excessive bending, twisting, and reaching? What is the location of loads and distance to be moved? Are there any mechanical devices available, or can someone help you? 3. Control. After identifying the risk factor, determine the controls that will eliminate or minimize exposure to the risks. Find and select the best options, such as redesigning the work layout or using mechanical devices, or get someone to help you. Is there an alternative, such as using trolleys, pallet jacks, forklifts? Your back is not a crane. 4. Review. The control measures put in place must be regularly monitored and reviewed to ensure they have been implemented and are effective in minimizing the risk of further injury. Safe manual handling, avoiding accidents or injury. Lift within your own capacity. Manual handling lifting techniques. Avoid lifting, pulling, or pushing items that are too heavy or beyond your capacity. Follow these safe lifting principles. 1. Get close to the load. 2. Feet apart for balance. 3. Bend your knees. 4. Get a firm grip with both hands. 5. Point your feet in the direction you want to go. 6. Keep your back as straight as possible. 7. Raise your head. 8. Straighten your legs. 9. Don't twist your body. 10. Keep the object close to your body when moving. 11. Ensure you have clear vision and path. Do. Lift within your own capacity. Use team lifting where possible. Use the correct lifting techniques. Take regular exercise to strengthen muscles. Use a mechanical device. Exercise regularly. Don't. Overstretch or twist your body when storing or retrieving items. Overload. Try to lift items that are not secured or overbalanced or too heavy. Is an item too heavy? Do not try to move it. Get help or use a mechanical device. Personal protection equipment. Personal protective equipment is used to protect a person from risks to your health and safety. Types of PPE. Safety footwear, safety vests, safety clothing, gloves, eye protection, ear protection, safety helmets, harnesses or respirators. Protection equipment must be used, as directed by safety sign or instruction such as an SDS, as directed by a policy or procedure, when working in a shared mobile traffic area, as deemed necessary in maintaining safety, when working with machines, chemicals, hazardous substances, dust, mist or vapours, when working at heights, when handling sharp or hot objects. Refusal to wear safety equipment or tampering with safety equipment may result in disciplinary action, including dismissal. Managing chemicals and gases. There are a number of gases, chemicals or substances used or stored in the workplace. Some of these gases, chemicals or substances are safe, but others may be hazardous or dangerous and have an adverse effect on health or the environment. Every chemical used in the workplace should have a safety data sheet or SDS. SDSs must be used within 5 years of last date of issue and provide basic information about. MSDSs can be obtained from the manufacturer or supplier. The chemical name, manufacturer and contact details. Hazardous nature of the gas, chemical or substance. How the gas or chemical may be at risk to health, safety and environment. How to use the gas, chemical or substance safely. First aid treatment in case of an emergency. What personal protective equipment is required. How to transport or store the gas, chemical or substance safely. How to clean up and dispose of the gas, chemical or substance in case of a spill. Managing chemicals in the workplace. 1. Ensure all containers are labelled. 2. Know where to locate SDSs in the event of an emergency. 3. Store all chemicals in accordance with regulations and codes. 4. Do not store chemicals near an ignition source or drain. 5. Use the appropriate protection equipment such as gloves and eye protection. 6. Remove and dispose of empty containers appropriately. 7. Clean up any spills or leaks. 8. Dispose of chemicals in accordance with relative regulations and codes. 9. Be aware of any emergency action plan in the event of an incident or accident. 10. Do not dispose of any chemical down drains or on the ground. 11. Report any spills, hazardous or dangerous occurrences to your manager. 12. Do not store chemicals where they are exposed to an ignition source or can contaminate the environment. Plant and equipment in the workplace. In the workplace, there are many potential hazards. Not all hazards can be eliminated. Therefore, you need to be aware of the environment you are working in and the potential hazards and risks within the work environment. Severe injuries or death can result from the unsafe use of plant or equipment due to lack of proper maintenance, not reporting faulty or damaged plant or equipment, improper use, poor design, misuse, or lack of competency. The following represents some of the hazards that you may encounter in your work. Work areas may include shared pedestrian and mobile equipment zones, the task, tools of the trade. Be aware of your surroundings. Working where forklifts operate, falls from ladders or roofs, faulty equipment, misuse of gas bottles, brazing, etc. Other hazards may include enclosed machinery. Do not remove any guards or lockout tags. Report any unsafe and damaged equipment. Electrical hazards such as damaged wires, cables, switches, etc. Do not mess with electricity. Ensure people working at heights wear the appropriate safety equipment and have the appropriate competency training certificate or license. Do not touch or use any tools, equipment or machinery you are not trained in, authorized or competent to operate. Drugs and alcohol. No illicit drugs or alcohol in the workplace. In order of maintaining a safe work environment, possession of, trafficking in, using illicit drugs or being under the influence of intoxicating liquor while at work will warrant disciplinary action up to and including termination. The use of drugs and/or alcohol in the workplace may impair a worker's ability to perform their work safely, efficiently, and with respect for colleagues, clients, and others. Any person judged to be incapable of performing his or her duties as a result of using drugs or alcohol will be refused entry to any premises CBC workers are engaged in. Risk, hazards and controls. Confined space entry. HSE 0303. 1. Ensure people are trained. 2. Atmosphere safe to enter. 3. Be ready to rescue. 4. Authorized to work. HSE 0301. Working at height. Working at height. HSE 0305. 1. Never work at heights without appropriate training or authorization. Always use the hierarchy of controls to manage the risk of falling from one level to another. 2. Plan to prevent and protect against falling objects. 3. Be rescue ready. Cranes and lifting. 1. Never work under suspended load, HSE-03-15, and stay outside the drop zone. Mobile plant and traffic management, EXE-03-11. 1. Ensure people are licensed to operate. 2. Plan your journey. 3. Obey the speed limits. 4. Never walk behind, stand behind, parked vehicles. Excavation, penetration and open pits, SAP-0302. 1. Authorize to start. 2. Identify services. 3. Safe access and egress. Working at heights. Working at heights is a term that refers to work that is within 2 metres of any edge or existing structure from which any person may fall more than 2 metres. The following issues that must be considered before working at heights are as follows. Wherever possible, plan work so as to avoid working at heights, i.e. assemble items at ground level before lifting into position. Ensure risk assessment is carried out to identify, assess and control hazards that may exist, i.e. write up an SWMS. Communicate with site coordinators and other providers in the area so as to gain the best and safest method of access. When working at heights, it is appropriate to have signs indicating this to others in the area or that may be in the area during your work. Consider barricading directly under your area of work if there is any risk of fallen materials or equipment. Harnesses and fall arrest devices. Using safety harnesses, lanyard assemblies, static safety lines, slings, inertia reels, and other fall arrest devices, recognize the need to ensure that a person will survive a fall when working at heights and minimize serious injuries. Elevated work platforms. All personnel and providers involved in the operation of elevating work platforms must be adequately trained and licensed if boom length of greater than 11 metres. This is a requirement of the NSC for users and operators of industrial equipment. Certification training is not required to operate a scissor lift, however, the usual competency and operation provisions apply to users. Scaffolding. Scaffolding provides a safe means of access to all working platforms more than 2 metres high. Improper erection of scaffolding creates a high-risk area. Ensure foundations are adequate to take the load and properly braced. Scaffolding above 4 metres in height is to be erected by a certified scaffolder. Cranes and carnage. Only authorized certified operators are permitted to operate cranes, and only certified dogmen can give directions to crane drivers. When setting up, always check the location of hazards. Example, overhead electrical wires, protection such as rubber sleeves may be required. The safe working load must be displayed on the crane. All loads are to be evenly weighted. Be aware of materials being moved and always avoid standing under any load. Never work on an item suspended from a crane. Ladder safety. Though working from ladders does not always involve the risk of falling more than 1.8 metres, fall prevention is an important hazard control measure when dealing with ladders. Where possible, a person must have two hands free to ascend and descend a ladder, i.e., all material and tools which cannot be safely secured from the worker's belt should be independently transferred or hoisted to the work location. Ladders must be secured against movement and be supported from a firm, level, non-slip surface. Straight ladders must be tied off near the top of the ladder to a secure point. ensure that no task requires overreaching. Only one person can be on a ladder at any time. Ladders are not to be set up on scaffolding or elevating work platforms to gain extra height. Excavation and trenching. The following hazards are commonly associated with excavation work and should be considered by the risk assessment process. The fall or dislodgement of earth or rock. Instability of the excavation or any adjoining structure. The inrush or seepage of water. Unplanned contact with utility services, example, electricity cables or gas main. The placement of excavated material. The movement of positioning or heavy plant and equipment. Ground vibration. Vehicle movement near or over the excavation. The excavation will be a confined space if more than 1.5 metres deep and not well ventilated or subject to fumes, gases. Trenches can be very dangerous. If the right precautions are not taken, the sides of the trench can collapse and anyone working in it can be buried. Don't let this happen on your worksite. Control measures should be considered. Isolate the area, including fencing, barricading, handrails or covers. Backfill as work progresses. Use hazard warning lights, signs, marker or flags. Sentries may be posted to warn people and keep them away. Site security measures including fencing or the use of a safety observer. Night lighting. Pumping out of and dewatering of all trenches and excavations. If these control measures are properly thought out, installed and maintained until the work is completed or until there is no longer a risk of falling into the excavation. Dust and fibre hazards. There are significant inhalation hazards associated with some materials that we are exposed to in our industries. These include dust. Some work locations are dusty. They may have environmental dust that is a feature of the work location. Depending upon what the dust particles are, the hazard may vary from an irritation problem to a chemical hazard. The important issue is to conduct a hazard assessment of the nature of the particles in the dust. Safety information will determine the appropriate action for dusts, such as silica, coal, asbestos, synthetic mineral fibres, SMF, cotton dust, wood dust. In some situations, our personnel providers or sub-personnel providers may be responsible for generating the dust hazard. This may be in the case of trenching or concrete grinding. It will be important for those generating the hazard to notify other workers in the area of the dust about to be produced. Warning signs may be needed. Concrete can contain some silica. In dusty conditions, employees shall wear an approved dust mask. Some dusts can damage your lungs and make breathing difficult. Dusty work areas should not be swept. This only increases the amount of particles in the air that could then be more easily inhaled. Dusty areas should be wet mopped or vacuumed with an appropriate filter to clean them up. Asbestos. Asbestos has been used extensively in industry and the manufacture of domestic material because of its properties of flexibility, durability and resistance to fire, heat and electrical current. Care must be taken if there is a risk of an asbestos product being at a workplace. A risk assessment should be made by the senior site representative prior to work commencing. Asbestos sheets should never be broken and debris must not be swept up. Airborne fibres and dust particles pose a hazard. If asbestos is found in a work area, even though our workers are not directly working with asbestos, we shall wear disposable overalls and appropriate respirators while working in the area. Synthetic mineral fibres. Synthetic mineral fibres, SMF, are general terms used to describe silicate fibres with no regular shape that are manufactured from minerals such as ceramic fibres, rock wool, fibreglass and alumina. Continuous glass filaments, e.g. fiberglass, used in textiles, reinforced plastics and concretes. Glass fiber or glass wool, used in the form of insulation mats. Rock wool, used as insulation in a spray-on form, acoustic insulation and fire-rating material. Ceramic fibers, used in the form of insulation blankets, common trade names, Kaowool and Fiberfrax. Personal protective equipment, masks, as a minimum, must be used according to the exposure level. half-face P1 or P2 dust masks are recommended. Cutting and welding. When using oxyacetylene cutting equipment, electric arc welding apparatus, or any device capable of producing flame, smoke, or sparks within the school grounds and/or construction site, personnel shall comply with the following general safety guidelines. Arc welding. Electric arc welding machines are generally only permitted for use within the work environment during normal construction hours. If working on school grounds, the school principal should be consulted before the commencement of any welding operations. The contractor will be required to have prior approval before commencing any work involving the use of welding apparatus. Fire extinguishers. Where the work procedure includes any form of welding within the work environment, the personnel provider shall provide a suitable fire extinguisher at the work location. Care should be taken to ensure the correct type is being used for the application. Fire extinguishers are for emergency purposes only. Oxyacetylene. Flame arresters are required at both the bottle and torch ends. The personnel provider must ensure that his or her oxygen, acetylene, and gas cylinders are secured in an upright position in an appropriate cradle before being permitted within the work environment. Ensure all cylinders are turned off when not in use. Eye protection. Personnel providers must ensure that the appropriate eye protection is worn at all times when using any oxyacetylene cutting equipment or electric arc welding apparatus. Welding screens. Personnel providers shall provide welding screens to protect students, staff, and other personnel from inadvertent arc flashes. Marking hot items. Personnel providers shall mark hot on welded items immediately after welding and make adequate means to prevent personnel from inadvertently handling such items until they have been cooled. Working near traffic. Carrying out work near moving plant or vehicular traffic is often a high-risk activity where additional control measures are necessary to ensure workplace health and safety in relation to the use of the plant and the activities around them. Vehicle movement procedures should be identified and preferred travel paths for vehicles associated with a worksite entering, leaving, or crossing the through traffic stream. This procedure should include personnel, moving equipment, plant and traffic within the work area, and identify routes for trucks, etc. at key points located on site. The risk assessment should consider at least the following. The possibility of isolating vehicles and plant from other work areas by guiding people around the area, fencing, barricading it off, establishing warning signs and traffic control signals. Plan the direction of vehicle movement so that the visibility of operators is not restricted. The use of safety observers to control traffic movement, in particular where multiple vehicles are involved. Appropriate warning signs, marker and high visibility protective clothing with reflective strips. Safe working distances from roadways. Vehicle speed limits must be established and communicated to all workers. Minimize the number of moving plant working at one time. Training and instruction in the traffic control processes at the worksite is recommended. Work must never commence until all safety precautions have been implemented and traffic brought under control. Vehicle incidents must be reported in 30 minutes. If you have a vehicle incident, you must not admit responsibility. You must attempt to secure photographs of the vehicles, roadway and damage. Other vehicle's driver, insurance details and home address of the driver, owner and address and contact person. When driving on client's site, you must obey the site's traffic management plan. The vehicle must be kept in a clean and professional manner. Your driving reflects on the company's, so responsible driving and professional behaviour is required at all time. Monthly vehicle checks to be carried out by the driver. Report any concerns you may have. Site visitors. It is the responsibility of the site coordinator at any work location to ensure that a fully inducted personnel or provider accompanies all visitors on work premises or work sites where CBC is working. Site coordinator is responsible for ensuring that all personnel providers are inducted and use safety systems that accord with the CBC requirements. Site visitors shall comply with the PPE requirements for that location and be instructed in the use. Records of visitors' access on entry are to be maintained on site. This facilitates mustering in the event of evacuation. With regard to deliveries to a site, all drivers will need to wear mandatory PPE upon leaving their vehicles, such as hard hat, safety boots, safety glasses, etc. Any special site delivery instructions should be included on the purchase order to avoid drivers being refused site access. In general, members of the public shall be discouraged from entering work locations without reason. Care shall be taken by our personnel, providers, to ensure that members of the public are not placed under any risk by our actions. For example, dropping tools onto footpaths from above or driving our vehicles in an inappropriate manner.